Everything that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh. You can make them cry. Anything, anything.
Hey, and welcome back to another episode of Extra Features Interview. Today, with some crazy man decided to send me four of his performances and wanted me to review them all at once. But since we don't do reviews on the show, we like to talk. He's going to have to talk about all four movies. He didn't expect that, I bet. Welcome, Timothy J. Cox, to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So what's happening? So you were telling me, we were talking earlier before we even started recording, so they told us to be quiet because I wanted to discuss this. Because I think this is really interesting. You're like an indie promoter.
Yeah, you know, over the last, I moved to New York in 2001 solely to be a stage actor. And that's what I did with an occasional film appearance at that time.
Stop recording.
I started doing film. I was lucky enough to, you know, get involved with some great filmmakers. And just, I don't know, something, you know, that I just started doing on my own with the permission of the filmmakers was just scouring the internet for critics to submit the films to, you know, to get it seen more than anything. I mean, getting, whether it's a good or a bad review, you know, a good review obviously is nice. I mean, I'm not a masochist, but I think getting the film seen, because, you know, there are so many filmmakers out there who make films or web series, and the big issue is, you know, getting it seen, not just by, you know, agents and casting directors, but just from the public in general. So that's really what I, my motivation for doing it, just to try to get it seen by as many people as possible.
Now, are you saying you've met all these people? I mean, do they want you to be a champion for them, I guess, is what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, if it's a film that I'm really, really proud of, like the four I sent you, these are films that I'm proud to be a part of and filmmakers that I'm proud to have worked with. And, you know, it's a pleasure just to send it out, spread it out, and hopefully people, you know, critics and other filmmakers are as enthusiastic about it as I am.
Now, you said you moved to New York. Now, do you find the indie film in New York better than indie film in other places, or no?
You know, somebody was saying, Chad Meisenheimer, I think I butchered his last name. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're good. You're good. Chad will love
it. But he, I think he said something on Twitter the other day that I agree with him that I don't know if the phrase indie film even exists anymore. I think I kind of, you know, like the guerrilla style. I think that's how, like, I mean, certainly the films that I've worked on, you know, like there's, you know, thought behind it, process and all of that. But I don't know if the phrase indie applies. I mean, certainly a lot of them are very shoestring. Some of them are done for a little. But I think the definition now compared to, like, when – like Evil Dead, like if we're talking Hollywood, Evil Dead is like a real indie film. But some people would say that Sideways was an indie film, a wonderful film, an amazing film. But, you know, it was made in Hollywood. So – I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the phrase indie means anymore. I mean, I like being an indie. I kind of like to say I'm underground because, you know, I navigate through the city as an actor. I don't have an agent. I don't have a manager. I've tried going down that road. And I have found that in my, just for me, the best experiences I've ever had is just, you know, being a journeyman actor, going out there, you know, just hitting the bricks, auditioning, and just doing it. And it's not a conventional route, but my dad said, he said, whatever you're doing, it seems to work, and keep doing it. So, and I keep getting cast in a lot of things, so I must be doing something right.
I just want to go back to your point on indie film. I always consider, like, I would never want to sit – I mean, if I sat down with Alexander Payne for Sideways, I would not consider that an indie interview in any way. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's more the actors in the film that are indies. You know what I mean? A lot of you guys don't get paid.
Yeah.
A lot of people are doing it just to get noticed. And, you know, and that's why, like, I guess a film under, let's say, $25,000, I would look at as an indie film.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
That's just how I look at it.
Yeah, in that respect, I think as far as an actor, I guess I am an indie actor. I mean, a lot of the actors that I admire, you know, the the Paul Giamatti's, the Philip Seymour Hoffman's, the William H. Macy's, people like that, Parker Posey, Patricia Clarkson, they started out and continue to thrive in those kinds of projects, passion projects, projects that wouldn't be necessarily probably picked up by, you know, Hollywood studios and things like that.
Yeah, I see where you're going. I mean, I would argue all those people, though, are names. If you said those to movie people that watch films, they know their names.
Let's see. Someone like Richard Jenkins. Or
who I love. He's a wonderful actor. But again, yeah, he's a character actor. He's in 50,000 movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, most indie people I know that I consider indie, like yourself, probably don't make a big living being an indie actor. You have a day job, I presume, of some kind.
Yeah, I'm a tour guide here in the city. And, you know, I mean, a lot of the projects that I work on, you know, I mean, as far as there, I mean, a lot of them are union projects, the professional. The pay is the low, like the scale. You know, you're not walking away with, I don't know anyone who's walking away with $25 million like Tom Cruise money. he's a good businessman these days, but I think in a lot of cases it's really about the script, the characters, the people, and just the doing of it. I mean, like, you know, it's fun. I mean, I would love to be able to wake up tomorrow and, you know, acting be my sole job. But the reality is also is that you have to be realistic also. I mean, you know, I'm going out to California in a month to do a play with good friends. We're making money on it, but we're not getting rich by it. But it's, you know, it's the experience, it's the work, it's the doing of it. That's, in the end, that's the reward.
So since you've just told us what your job is, I'm going to ask you some questions before we get into your films. It sounds like fun. Have you ever got a job from being a tour guide?
An acting job?
Yeah.
No. It's funny. You know, I mean, I do student tours. Groups come to town for like 4 or 5 days and take them around, show them the sights. And, you know, usually there's chaperones and teachers and things like that that come along. And usually the question that I get is, you know, how hard is it to do it? And, or do you ever get frustrated at the ups and downs? And usually the answer is no, because, you know, from the time when I started doing this at 14, 15, I knew I was going to be a character actor, a supporting actor. And the reality is like, you know, guys like Richard Jenkins and Paul Giamatti and Patricia Clarkson, all of them were my idols. And so the great thing about being a tour guide, though, is that it's improvisational theater. So I get to employ a lot of the skills as an actor, because, you know, you got to think fast on your feet a lot of times as a tour guide.
Well, there you go. So let's get into your films. We got lots here to go through. So we had some fun at the beginning. Let's start with Dirty Books.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you come to that project?
There was an ad on Mandy.com. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you look at a casting and I thought, wow, that's right up my alley. And I submitted, and the filmmakers, Fitchford Films, contacted me, and I submitted a video, and I met with the writer-director, Zach LaPierre. We met at Rockefeller Center. We chatted a little about the project, and then he cast me, and then I went out to Massachusetts and worked on the film. And it's like a nice, sweet little film. It, you know, it reminds me of, like, you know, throwback to, like, those 80s comedies, like, kind of John Hughes kind of the charm. And I thought it was just a good part, and that's usually the criteria, you know. If it's a script, if it's a good part, if it's a part that's something that I haven't done before, or a variation, you know, something different, then that's usually something that I want to jump at.
I guess my question is, you read a script first, obviously, I presume, or you don't know sometimes when you go to check these out?
Oh, yeah. Usually they have a script available online that you can read, or, you know, they send it to you when they email you and say, hi, you know, we're interested in having you audition. Here's the entire script for you to read. And read the script, liked it a lot. And that's usually, if the script is good, that's obviously, because everything, it's all about what's on the page. If it's not on the page, you know, you don't have a film as far as I'm concerned.
So let's get into Dirty Books a bit more. The lead character doesn't seem to like quite get with the times. I mean, the teacher's being honest with him, going, like, you guys need to go to a blog. He's like, I don't want to do that. I want newspaper. I'm like, they're kind of dead. Shouldn't he know that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, David, he's stubborn.
Yeah.
He's just a stubborn kid. You know, I think he's rebellious. And one of the things that I kind of admired the character, because he was, you know, that he's fighting for something. Yeah, I mean, it's something that may not be with the times, but the fact that it was the one thing that I really liked about this script, it was nice to read a script with about a teenager that actually fought for something, ultimately something that he was probably going to lose the battle, but it was nice to see this kid fight for something, stand by his convictions. Of course, you know, when he got his hands on the book and started, you know, making up some stories, he kind of got lost. But that was appealing to me as well, to see, like, the journey of this kid. And he learned a lot from it. I mean, I think, you know, he walked out in the end, I think, with his head held high. And hopefully, you know, it was kind of one of those things where I'm kind of interested about what he would be doing now, for example.
I agree. I was trying to figure out how you paid for those in newspapers he was mailing it, giving out to everybody. I was kind of like, he has no money.
Yeah, that's one for Zach LaPierre. And the, and I should mention those guys. So that crew, it was Zach, who was the writer director. He co-wrote it with Ian Everhart, who was the DP, and Matt Rendini and Michael Kutch. And these guys were great. They were just solid guys, good sense of humor, really nice, laid back, and I think they made a good film and one I'm proud to be a part of.
No, I like the film. I just wish it was – I wanted more from the film, I guess, is what I'm getting. Nothing wrong with your part, nothing wrong with the writing. Maybe an addition. What did he do in future life? I agree with you. I want to know what he did.
Yeah.
Because it was just too quick for me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's – you know – sometimes in the confines of the short film, I mean, I guess that's a great compliment, that if you want more out of it, I mean, that's a great compliment to the film. But and that's the thing is, you know, you never know with like Whiplash was a short film eventually that got extended into that, you know, the feature. So, you know, never say never. You never know what
David's
story could come back again.
I think so. So I guess we should – I wish I had more to say, but it's only like 14 minutes. I find it killed by. I wish I knew more about some of the characters. I find they're just sort of – like even you yourself, tell them and that's it. You kind of are only on screen for 3 minutes, maybe five.
Yeah, he comes in. I mean, he has like that, you know, in the beginning and in the end there. And I don't know. You know, I think I kind of played him as a guy who kind of admires David for – fighting. He knows he's going to win. He knows he's going to lose, but there's that little bit of like, you know, you admire him. I mean, he knows that, like I said, like David's going to lose, but how I played it was that he admires David for at least fighting for something.
I agree. Okay. So let's go. You play a teacher again, kind of a counselor, and here lies Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Now this one's I thought was a little disturbing as a script.
Oh, really?
I thought this – I like this one. I think this is kind of weird at times. I mean, I'm sure you've watched the film. I mean, when you start off, the sound – I just noticed the sound, the duct tape sound as he's putting it over the window. And you hear everything in the beginning. So, I mean, it's very isolated where he's sitting in the car. And I hear the car turned on and it just sort of stops. And it just sort of sits there.
It – That was, I mean, I think visual wise, it's an absolutely beautiful film. Mark Battle, who directed the film, he co-wrote the film with Pam Conway and was also, cinematographer on the film. He has a way of like just creating just these beautiful, really striking, images. It's amazing. Here Lies Joe over the last couple of years has probably been the most, I guess it's been amazing to kind of see the reactions. There are people who have really, really loved the film, and then there have been some, maybe a handful or so, who didn't get it, or and that's, you know, and that's kind of the nice thing about, you know, at least getting the film seen is that everybody walks away with a different feeling about it. The ending of that movie, it's like the beginning of this relationship that it may go nowhere, but I think the point of the film is that both of those characters, that of Z and Joe, are looking for their next new beginning, I guess.
Hold on. We can discuss the end, because with the end, it just sort of ends when she doesn't answer the call.
Well, actually, yeah, I mean, I thought she does answer the call.
No,
she does talk to her.
He leaves her a message.
That's right. Oh, my God. That's right.
So we don't know the end. So I'm presuming she succeeded.
I don't know. That's one for Mark. For Mark and for Pam.
I know you're in it. Because, I mean, Z, he talks to Z. They have a, I have a, were you on this set the whole time? Because I have one question.
No, I came up. I just, they shot the, you know, the Suicide Anonymous sequence. They just shot it in one day. And I came up and we worked, and then I went back the next day and, you know, had a nice time, very easy, very laid back. I mean, you know, Mark and I chatted quite extensively about the character of Bill, you know, leading up, because, I mean, Bill's in the movie for, what, 2.5 minutes maybe? But this is an example. These are the kinds of characters I like. In a 23-minute film, when he just jumped off the page to me, I mean, even though he's a small part, I thought, well, I could really do something with this because this is a guy who kind of makes an impact. I didn't want to make him a clown. I wanted to make him as much as possible a living, breathing person, as much as possible, a guy who really is in over his head. I mean, I don't think he can handle – you know, Z has fun with him, and, you know, Carol, of course, is, you know, she's a handful as well. So it was fun to go up and just play this really, really nice supporting part.
Okay, I'm still going to ask you my question. So you've watched the film. When Z goes down to pick up the strawberries from the grave, were they there before or did they plant them?
I don't know. I wasn't on set the whole time, but I think they planted them. If I know
that's
Mark,
what I would say.
Mark is very, very, very detail oriented. He likes to do a lot of takes.
So maybe you can help me a bit on the mark. When he was casting Z, I think you have to have a very, like yourself as a teacher, you have to have a specific person that suit that role.
Uh-huh.
Like you as a teacher have to look like the teacher he's looking for.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, Z has to look like Z, or it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, I can't see Jennifer Lawrence being Z. It wouldn't work for me. Parker Posey, yes.
Parker Posey, I mean, yeah. I think more of a – I think for Jennifer Lawrence, I think it would be a stretch. I mean, Andy Morrow, who played Z, it was just sweet, but she was able to tap into that I guess there's no other word, just – there's just a badass quality to her. But, like, she was able to show, like, there was a vulnerability to her that I think that she didn't show many people. She showed little shades of it to Joe, but she always had this wall of, like, is always trying to be this badass.
I think she does that even to you as the teacher. She has that badass. You say, well, this is a chair for that guy that died. She puts her feet right on it in front of you.
Oh, yeah. I think she toys with Bill. I think, you know, she takes an enjoyment of that because Bill is so polite and nice and, you know, and she kind of takes advantage of that.
Do you think Bill even wants to be there?
I think he does. I think talking a little bit like what Bill does after a day of it. He just
what
goes
does
home
he
to his
do?
Apartment. He just goes home to his apartment and just, you know, I don't know if he gets any kind of emotional connection to the people. I chose to play it as a guy who in some way was touched by his life was touched by someone who committed suicide or a family member, what have you. And this is his way of giving back. But the reality is that he is just not qualified to deal with, you know, people who really have been affected by this. I think, you know, I don't think he's, I mean, he's not medically trained, and maybe that's, you know, he's just a guy, you know, he just volunteered to do this, but I don't think he has any real qualifications to help people like Z.
Well, or told, Joe, for that matter. I don't even know why Z shows up, I guess is what I was thinking.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I understand why Joe shows up. I get why Carol shows up, and I get why you show up, but that all makes sense to me.
I think she, I think there's a part of her that in, I think she probably likes the attention.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. I think in the end, you know, anyone that who goes to, you know, she might just like the attention.
Maybe. So I was just thinking to myself that when we were talking about it, do you, even though you hadn't seen, you've seen The Shape of Water, I presume?
I have, yeah.
Now, I pattern your guy, Bill, sitting there, would be like Richard Jenkins in The Shape of Water, just sitting at home, not eating his pie.
Yeah. He's
going back to get another piece. I could totally see him doing that.
Yeah.
That's why he goes back. He's unfulfilled for some reason.
Yeah. It's true. And it's, and there are people, you know, who just slog through life, you know, they have their routine. And maybe, and that's Bill too. I mean, like, you know, as far as like a job or things like that, like, I, you know, maybe, you know, whatever Bill does his job because that's what he has to do. I don't think he's married. I don't think he has any of those type of romantic attachments or anything like that. Is that, this might be all that he has in a way. It's his way of giving back.
So I'm going to, let's lead on to your next one. Cause again, that has a, I guess a cliffhanger ending. And then you gave me Total Performance, which I did quite like, too. I thought this was an interesting film that also gives me a cliffhanger ending.
Yeah, this was so Sean Meehan and I, since around 2010, we've done like 5 or 6 films together. And anything Sean does, like whether the part has, you know, 100 lines or 2 lines, I'll be there because, you know, Sean likes to tell, like, this is an odd story. And after we made the film and watched it and we're trying to get it out to festivals, the big thing is we didn't quite know how to categorize the film. Is it a comedy? Is it a drama? Is it a mystery? Is it this? It's, to me, it's all of those things. It's so many. You know, you can't put it into one category. It's odd. It's strange. It's strangely funny. It's a little mysterious. There's that cliffhanger at the end. And that's another film that it's just been interesting reading the reactions. Some get it or, you know, they really enjoy it, and some are just kind of baffled by it.
I thought it was a great idea, and I could see this company actually working.
Exactly.
I kind of like, wow, I'd actually work for that company. It looks like fun.
Yeah, it would be, but, you know, the kind of thing is, I think one of the things the film examines is that, you know, does the character that Tory Burner play, you know, when does the performance stop and real life begin? You know, I mean, like the date that she has with Tim, is she on? Is she giving a performance? Is it, you know, it's an interesting film. It's one that I, you know, I still don't know, you know, what it is. Is it a comedy, a drama? Is it, you know,
I think it's a drama. I wouldn't
kind
argue
of elements
it's a comedy.
Of Twilight Zone a little bit in there, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, okay, you're saying, does she, I think she's real on her date. I definitely got that impression.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know, like, she talks very openly. I said, this is going to happen, and I think she, because she can't give an opinion when she's doing her task, her job.
Right.
She states that 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
But when she's on the date, she seems very open, gives an opinion, talks about things. I don't know. I mean, I'd say she's not performing, but maybe I'm wrong.
It's interesting, like, some other reviews have have said that, and then some have felt, you know, that's the thing is I still don't know. I mean, Tori did such a great job. I mean, you know, a good film, like, it keeps you asking the questions, and I think this is one that keeps you guessing and keeps you asking questions, wondering, I wanted more. I want more about this story and these characters. You kind of wonder, like, you know, if she stayed with the company, if she thrived, you know.
I don't know if she stayed with the company. I think she wants to be an actress. I think that's why she's with the company, kind of like you, looking for your break.
Yeah, exactly.
I did have a question, though, because you being an actor, and I just noticed this while I was watching the film, never being in an audition in my life, do all the actors look the same at the audition?
As far as, like, physicality?
Yes.
Physical look?
Absolutely.
It depends. I mean, you know, sometimes, like, casting people put out something that says male 30 to 50. So the range of, like, you know, people that come in are obviously between 30 and 50. Whereas sometimes, when these are the good ones, where if a director puts, like, a specific look, like, we want an actor between 30 and 35, we want average height, you know, this. Sometimes hair color is mentioned, but most of the time, you know, you go into a waiting room, you see some slight similarities, but in most cases, casting people put, like, a wide range of, like, what they're looking for in a character. And, of course, you could get, like, you know, 200 or more people auditioning for the same part.
Because I noticed when she came out of the door from her audition, the woman there looked exactly like her.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's very eerie. That looks like the same person.
And, of course, you know, every actor has different unique experiences. But in my experience, because, you know, like, character actor, supporting actor, you know, like the stuff I submit for, you know, there are so many different kinds of varieties. Casting directors, they want to see all different types of, you know, physical types and, you know, blonde hair, brunette, redhead, you know, balding, what have you, just to read for a specific part.
Now, do you think your character in the film fired his friend at the end?
I think he did.
So do I. I think he just didn't have the confidence to do it. And the interview helped him.
And that was, you know, the thing is, you know, Walter was an interesting little part to play because, you know, he having this unfortunate task of having to fire his friend, but he had to do it. And, you know, those are the tough choices that, you know, you have to make sometimes. But I most definitely think he did it, yeah.
Now, let's go back to the end of this film. I don't want to quite ruin it, but we'll kind of dance around it. Do you think the male tells his girlfriend what he's supposed to tell her?
Yeah.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that impression.
Oh, yeah.
Because he...
I think he tells her, and when he goes back in, you know, the end... I think that's the aftermath. I think most definitely he does.
See, I'd say he didn't get through his interview with her. He didn't finish it.
Oh.
So I'm saying maybe he lacks confidence because he tells her to go. So maybe he changed his mind is what I was thinking.
Huh. That's a beautiful thing, you know, it keeps you guessing, keeps you asking questions.
Well, I just thought maybe it would have been, I was thinking maybe he was going to make the other woman come out and go, hey, I'm dating her now, get lost. And I thought, hey, that would be easier for him.
No.
But he didn't do that. So I'm thinking maybe he changed his mind. So that's just my opinion. And I mean,
yeah,
it's open to any opinion we want to give it. So
So
let's go to your last film, What Jack Built.
Mm-hmm.
And where did you film this is what the first question I have.
We filmed it out in Long Island, in the Ronkonkoma area of Long Island. And the filmmakers, Ross Mailer and his son Matthew, who is the director, Ross's parents at their home, they have this kind of basically this woods area as their kind of part of their backyard. And it was just perfect. It was just the perfect place to, you know, to film, very easy. Obviously didn't have to deal with a lot of, you know, other things around there, but for the movie that we were making, it was absolutely it was fun. It was perfect.
Did you enjoy, like, you have stuff everywhere in this place, and I wrote, Jack has a lot of tools to play with.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think an actor, you know, I mean, that's the thing is, so that basement, that was Ross's father's basement, and he just had one of those old, you know, tool rooms that, you know, my grandfather used to have, and you just have all of the toys down there, and, you know, Jack is just, he just hoards stuff, and he's just making this device to catch this, you know, this being, this thing that's out there, and, you know, he just kind of becomes desperate. It's always fun to play with all of the toys and stuff like that. It was kind of, I didn't know going in that it was going to be so much, but it was so much fun to play around with.
I guess my question is, what do you think he was trying to catch?
I think in his mind, I think he really thought there was a beast out there. I think kind of like, you know, he's Ahab and he's trying to catch his white whale.
Because I thought maybe he was trying to catch an evolving snowman or Sasquatch, and then he built the box. I'm like, okay, that's too small.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's a gigantic wolf. Maybe it's a fox. My brain is guessing now because I'm trying to figure out. Maybe it's a goblin.
Specifically, you know, what it was never revealed. And we never really, I mean, we knew that it was a beast or a force or of some kind. But what specifically, it was never decided. I mean, it kind of, we didn't want to show it. One, for budgetary reasons, we didn't have anything to show. And also, you thought it was just kind of fun to keep the audience guessing of what it was.
So, I guess my question is, three of your four movies have not a finite ending. Is that a plan of yours, to pick movies that don't have finite endings?
No, I guess it was not something that I set out. I guess kind of, you know, at the end of these movies, yeah, I guess my thing is, I just come back to my point that these are movies that you wonder what's going to happen next, and the audience can draw their own conclusions and think, oh God, I wonder what, you know, was Jack killed, or, you know, what happened with Joe and with Z, or what happened with Carol, or, you know, does the Suicide Anonymous meeting going on? What happened to David? Did David go to college, or did he, you know, I mean, those are the kinds of questions that I think about when I read, you know, read the script.
So have you ever run across, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, you've done a lot of work. Have you ever had a script that you got offered and you're like, that's not for me?
Usually if the script is, you know, there's sometimes when you say no, mostly these days, if I say no to something, it's mostly because, oh, I've done that role before, or I've done that kind of a role before. And, you know, sometimes it's just something that, it just doesn't interest me. But then I think these days, you know, you try to look for parts that are interesting, that challenge you and scare me a little bit. If it scares me a little bit, that's something that, cause you know, you want to embrace the challenges, but that's the thing is, it's, you know, you always keep an eye out for the good scripts, because like I said, that's where it starts. That's where it all starts, with good script.
Now, I don't know if this has helped you at all, so this question may have no relevance. I apologize ahead of time. It doesn't, because I don't, because you live in New York, there's a lot of off-Broadway productions and there's theater everywhere you go. Have these films helped you in that regard?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I, a lot of the theaters that I work in these days, or some of them are very small black buck kind of theaters, where, you know, in some ways you have to employ very subtle, almost filmmaking, film style acting. So a lot of the same muscles are used. And of course, you know, when you get into the larger theaters, you know, obviously you got to use more of your voice and your body and stuff like that. But, I think it working on film has made me a better, well-rounded actor all around in the theater and in film, hopefully. But I keep doing it because, I mean, luckily this is the one profession, one of the many few professions, where you never stop learning. I think with, you know, I've been doing this for more than half my life, and I'm still learning. I don't claim to know anything. I'm just a journeyman actor trying to go out there and, you know, do what he loves as much as possible, and it's still fun for me. I still enjoy it.
Well, that's good. I would hate to do something, especially in a place like New York City. It's just full of acting and actors and hate doing what I'm doing. That would not be enjoyable. At least I think there. Okay, I guess it's time for fun questions. Are you ready?
Sure.
I'm sure. Have you? I don't know if you've heard one of my interviews or not, but if you haven't.
I have, yeah.
But they're always different, so you can't prepare for these.
No.
Since you've told me what you do, what's the best question you've ever been asked, or the strangest question?
The best, from a tour guide, oh my God, from a tour guide standpoint, the best question I've ever been asked. Okay, well, this happens to actually more tour guides than you would think. We'll be standing outside the Empire State Building, and someone will ask me, where's the Empire State Building? And it's, you know, I can't tell you, like that, like questions like that,
or, you're kidding,
you know, where is Grand Central, or where is Times Square? Like, we're in it.
They ask where Times Square is. It looks like,
yeah,
Times Square.
Yeah, exactly. I had an adult actually once, and we came to town. They were going to be in New York for like 4 or 5 days, and they asked, you know, are we going to the Liberty Bell? And I said, no, that's in Philadelphia. And he looked at me like I was nuts. I'm like, no, it's definitely in, you know, I was ready to like pull out Wikipedia and tell him. you keep a smile on your face, and, you know, you do, I mean, it's fun. I mean, I have colleagues who have, students, they're not questions so much, but like behavior. Here's one of like behavior. I had a group, they were staying in Manhattan, and it's like 7 o'clock in the morning, and I get a phone call from one of the parents saying, oh my God, Tim, my daughter and her friend, they went out, they snuck out of the hotel last night, and, you know, they're at the police station right now, and we're going to go get them. And, you know, could you check with the hotel about like hotel cameras and stuff? So I go down to the lobby, and I'm checking with the hotel staff, because they have cameras to see, you know, what time they walk down and all of that. And, the elevator door opens, and the group leader I was talking to and her mother and the two daughters came out. They pulled an April Fool's Day prank on their mother and the group leader.
Oh, God.
And so all four of them were crying. And the moment I saw them walk out of the elevator, I thought to myself, it's April Fool's Day. Like, you know, and I muttered a few profanities to myself.
I would hope so.
Yeah. And that was that was a 7-day tour. That was the second day.
Oh.
The other students on this tour hated these two girls for the remainder of the time they were on tour. And the girls were upset that, you know, the mothers yelled at them and that they didn't get the joke. So since then, I have hated April Fool's Day.
That's
but I thought that was mean. I thought that was really mean. So every April Fool's Day now on tour, I tell kids that, and I say, in case anyone has any ideas, don't do anything for April Fool's Day.
Okay, this is a two-part question.
Okay.
Question number one, what do you think of Virgil's?
That is a good one as far as barbecue, 44th Street, and it is right next door to the last of the really good dive bars in New York City, Jimmy's Corner. But Virgil's, their ribs are, I think, are some of the best in the city.
It's my favorite place to eat when I go to New York.
Oh, it's good. I've gone there with groups a couple of times, and it's like it's a gauntlet of food. They just bring out, because they just bring out everything family style, and it is outstanding.
Favorite place to eat in New York City.
Favorite place to eat in New York. Wow. God, that's a tough one.
And don't tell me Ray's Pizza, because it's not that
good. No.
And you can't have Virgil's now because I took that one off the list.
Wow, favorite place to eat. God, I don't have an. I tell you, years ago, I used to have a favorite Italian restaurant down. I used to work at a theater down on 13th Street between 5th and 6th in the West Village called La Dolce Vita, and they're long gone now. But that was good. Like, you can go and you get a bowl of pasta for like under $10, and it was a big bowl of pasta. And but I mean, that they've been long gone for several years now, but. There are a few places that, like, you know, everyone talks about how expensive New York can be. You search it out, you search places out, and you can find a place that's inexpensive. Any place down at in Little Italy, there's still good restaurants down there. That's a but God, a favorite. I can't narrow it down to just one.
Fair enough. Do you still go to Krispy Kreme donuts?
There's only one Krispy Kreme that I know of in the city, and it's in Penn Station. And whenever my wife and I, we travel to go visit my parents in Ocean City, Maryland, and we take New Jersey Transit, and we'll get a Krispy Kreme from time to time in there because they are delicioso.
I agree. They're my favorite. Oh, so there's only one left. There used to be one like 13th Street I used to go to because I used to always be over that way.
Yeah, it's the only one that I know of. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, we have just about every other major chain, you know, over 500 Starbucks and, you know, who knows about how many McDonald's and things like that. But no, not as many Krispy Kremes. Like I said, only one as far as I know.
Okay, this one's easy for you. Weirdest film on your shelf?
The weirdest film on my shelf? Oh, my God. Beer Fest.
Oh, okay. That's not that weird. I know Beer Fest.
But, like, you know, we have Casablanca and Something Like It Hot. I have a special place in my heart for Broken Lizard just because Super Troopers and Beer Fest, I mean, you know, they're fun. But some would probably say, you know, you're looking down the line like, oh, my God. Like, yeah, and the Beer Fest. I'm like, yeah, so.
It's your last question. It's really right. Easy. Your best play you've ever seen in New York.
Wow. When I saw Doubt on stage, I saw it three times with Cherry Jones and Brian F. O'Byrne, and it just knocked me out. 90 minutes, no intermission. And, you know, I had an acting teacher, Stanley Harrison, who would tell us stories of like, oh, he saw Brando and Jessica Tandy and Streetcar Named Desire, or, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf with Uta Hagen. I had never experienced a play like that like, changed, like, you know, the landscape of American theater, which is what John Patrick Shanley did with that show. I mean, because it was extraordinary. I mean, I remember being out at the pub after the show with friends, like saying, like, did he do it or did he not do it? Or, you know, and that's another one is August Osage County. I mean, the fact that Chicago production that was a hit in Chicago, they brought that production, that cast, no movie stars. And it was and is one of the most extraordinary plays of the last, you know, what, 20, 25 years, maybe.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And tell everybody where they can find your films.
My films, all of the films, many of them are available on Vimeo. Of course, if you go to IMDb, some of the films have been posted directly on the page. There are links. Oh, God, there are links all over. But, yeah, I would say Sweven Films, who produced Here Lies Joe. The film is available on their website. Here Lies Dirty Books is also available on YouTube. But there, many of them are also available for viewing with links on my website at timothyjcox.com.
Well, thank you for your time. You're awesome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. This was fun.
Have a great night.
You too.
Bye. Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.